Off the ball.
You know, Jerry was an oddball. You know, you didn't know what way to take Jerry at times. Jerry was strongly opinionated. He was controversial. He was so, so smart, such a philosopher, and just a great orator and a wonderful use of the English language. And I'm really saddened, really saddened.
Off the ball.
Weeknights from 7 and weekends from 1.
This is OTB Sports Radio, live 24/7 on the OTB Sports app. The OTB Podcast Network.
The News Round
on Off the Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
This is News Talk.
Yeah, you're welcome along. It's Wednesday evening's Off the Ball. Very happy to say on Wednesday Night Rugby tonight we have Stuart Barnes, who's going to join Keith Wood as usual. That is on the way at 8 o'clock. We are talking US sports around 8:40 or so with Tara O'Sullivan from the Boston Globe. Liam Griffin is going to join us this hour on the end for the Club Players Association. And then on the football show, it's been too long since we had Kevin Kilbane, so Kevin Kilbane is going to join us between 9 and 10. There is Premier League action this evening, including Manchester United away to Crystal Palace. So that is all on the way. 53106 is the text number. We're at Off the Ball on Twitter. Richard McCormack, evening.
Hey, Joe. Do you know what Neil Tracy sent to me there? He's, I think, looking after the show tonight. He sent me some Stuart Barnes doing the Joe Malloy presenting role back in the mid-90s, because Sky, believe it or not, used to show live All-Ireland League rugby matches. There's a full match-up on Sky somewhere with Stuart presenting from Dura Doyle, and there's a full like half an hour build-up to an All-Ireland League match on a Saturday afternoon on Sky, which back in the mid-90s is an absolute thing of wonder.
Wow. Yeah, he always came across, certainly on Sky Sports co-commentary, especially when he was doing Munster matches at the height of their march towards European glory, as someone who had a genuinely huge affection for Munster rugby and Irish rugby. So maybe that's the genesis of it as well. I didn't realise he was doing that back in the day originally.
Yeah. Like on a troll as well, they kind of find out commentators and stuff like that doing other stuff. Just Jonathan Pearce doing some presenting of an England match back in the day recently as well. That's how deep my YouTube trolling has gone, Joe. I'm in trouble.
Dan McDonald also with us. Evening.
Evening, lads.
Eagle-eyed viewers may spot you in the car. You're off to Shamrock Rovers' Cabin Teely this evening.
Getting a bit of pre-season action in, Joe. To be honest, I'm always a bit conscious going to games that, media people are the few people, you know, amongst the few can get to go to matches. But I have to admit, since it's been possible to go, since games have restarted, I've been trying to take in a couple because it's good to get out of the house and see what's going on. You know, there's not a huge amount of live sport happening in the country, but when it's on, I want to go and see what's happening. And no difference really this evening. Haven't been out to Tala in a while. So, have a look and see how Rovers are looking, basically.
Mm. Dan McDonald on World Cup 2030 last night was a joy to listen to. He was ranting like a sleep-deprived new father, but his points were valid, says Paul in Cork. Have you calmed down just a touch?
The suggestion would be that I wasn't calm at all. I mean, you could be right about sleep deprivation, but I'd like to think I'd get energised about politicians dabbling with sports stories at any time. I see the shit show is continuing. Now someone of the Jackie Cattle TV is on about bringing Messi to Stamford Stadium in 2030, which is, I mean, there's a couple of things wrong with that. One is Messi is going to be around 43 at the time. But listen, you know, this is what it's all about. This is what people want, Joe. Good news. I keep telling you. I've had some people very close to me who listened last night suggesting I'm being far too cynical. So maybe I should just wave the green flag and get on board with it.
We'll kick off the News Round on Off the Ball on News Talk with thanks to Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette made of what matters. Richie, you're starting with the Premier League this evening.
Yeah, 2 6 o'clock kickoffs in the Premier League this evening. It's currently Burnley 1, Leicester 1 at Turf Moor. Mate Vidra gave the hosts the lead there. It was cancelled out by Kelechi Iheanacho 11 minutes before half time. And there is what coming up on 5 minutes played in the second half. At Bramall Lane, similar time elapsed. Sheffield United leading Aston Villa by a goal to nil. That goal coming from former Republic of Ireland international David McGoldrick. And later, Manchester United will look to extend their unbeaten away record in the Premier League to an incredible 21 matches. when they face Crystal Palace. Kickoff at Selhurst Park is at 8:15. And in the last 16 of the Champions League, Manchester City have beaten Fiorentina with Luis Quinonal by 3-0. The second leg of that tie is in Florence on Thursday next.
We might try and chat to Louise Quinn. We were trying to speak to her last night ahead of that game, and she just wasn't able to do it. So we might check in with her in the next couple of days. 3-0 defeat, second leg in Florence to come, as Richie says. Philip Reynolds.
Yeah, he has launched an impassioned defence of Gordon Elliott. The Meath trainer faces an IHRB referrals committee on Friday regarding that photo of him sitting on a dead horse. Cheveley Park Stud yesterday withdrew their horses from Elliott's yard, but Reynolds will not be following suit. The owner of Presenting Percy says he's sticking with Elliott, claiming the trainer has been stripped bare and flogged to death in public.
Dan, I know you're a big racing fan. I think you mentioned before coming on air, you're going to be writing about this tomorrow in the Independent. What are you making of the whole situation over the last 3-4 days?
Yeah, I mean, listen, as someone who genuinely loves racing, like I do, at heart, the whole thing is sad, very disappointing and indefensible, really. There's not much more you can say about the images. I mean, I've been listening to a lot of the content and some of the stuff you've done in other places, and really, so I can't actually remember who it was that said, you know, that obviously, you know, the investigation into this thing shouldn't take long. I mean, it's what you can see, it's what's there before our eyes. It's pretty hard to stomach, really, particularly for those of us making this point who would constantly defend racing. You know, it's the time of the year when, you know, horses die at Cheltenham or Aintree, and if that happens, there's obviously, you know, sort of there will be a scrutiny, press releases sent out and to various places, and a sort of a storm generated. And I've had rows with people about this. I would always say, but yes, okay, it's a tough part of the game, this happens, but you know, you need to see how these animals are cared for, how they are looked after. You know, they're treated like kings all of their lives, and sadly these things happen. And you always assume that there's a degree of respect about how things are conducted behind the scenes. But I've been to yards and I've seen them firsthand, and I'm shocked. Like, I know there's obviously a certain coldness and detachment that needs to be there to some degree because it's a business. But I mean, it's just very hard to get your head around that you know, people, anyone could be so stupid. There's a couple of cases, particularly, you know, someone who's one of the top trainers in the business. But the story has moved on. You know, it moves on day by day, and it, you know, it does get to the stage where you think, at what stage does the demand for, well, what's the punishment going to be? Like, where does it stop? You know, I mean, and to say that is not to defend what happened in any way. And I suspect, you know, Gordon Elliott's reputation has been hurt in such a way that it's going to be hard for him to ever recover from it. But I do understand why some people are coming out and rallying around him in a sense too, like the owner, Philip Reynolds, you mentioned, because, you know, he does have a reputation for being quite good to deal with. His horses are generally, you know, very well looked after, and it's just, it's why so many people believe the image was fake last week. It's because it was so out of sync with what people assume to be reality. So he's lost some of his best horses at this stage, and there will be a punishment, and you suspect it's going to be strong. But it gets to the stage now where it's like, right, how do you try and move on from this in some way and learn from it?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I must say, increasingly, and maybe especially today, it's hard not to feel sorry for Gordon Elliott and what he's going through on a human level, because the scale of the story is so huge, and the consequences are becoming obvious as well. And on a human level, you suspect this is the worst week of his life, and so that is swirling around. So increasingly, that's the way I'm feeling about it now.
We did
make the point on Monday and Tuesday's piece that there has to be room for forgiveness or redemption there. That's kind of where I am increasingly now. On Monday in particular, the image speaks for itself. I don't think, you know, that point needs to be laboured. Anyone saying there's no problem with the image, you know, that's a crazy point, I think, to make. But the statement I was most critical of on Monday, whoever concocted that for him really let him down. And look, he has to take some responsibility for the statement being given the thumbs up as well. You know, the story about, well, I was on the phone and I got distracted and I sat down and I was just waving to kind of say I was on the phone. His words to the Racing Post subsequent to that, subsequent to our discussion on Monday, were much better. Moment of madness, like just an honesty about it. Because you want, what all you can have after an indiscretion like that is honesty. You know, hands up, mea culpa. You can, you know, let's rebuild some trust. And the initial statement didn't do that. So when I read, you know, what he had to say face to face to, I think it was David Jennings in the Racing Post, you know, that's much better. And I guess, yeah, the scale of the story, it's, you know, I don't know how you couldn't feel, whilst, you know, you still don't like what happened, some sympathy for him. And it's funny, I made that point on Twitter earlier because I had put up the original discussion on Twitter, the original point about the statement. So I thought, well, I'll put up the other side as well, how I'm feeling. And it's amazing, people don't seem to think you can hold both views. And I think it is possible to hold both views, for the criticism to stand, and it should stand. And there are probably questions as to why the photo was taken and you know, what that tells us about what's going on. But also to feel like, well, there's got to be room for rehabilitation or forgiveness once contrition is evident and genuine. And I think that's where I am with it anyway, Dan.
Yeah, like I think I totally see where you're coming from in that. And I think probably there's a sense the mood might have changed a small bit. I mean, I think sometimes, like in Irish life, we have an issue with accountability for stuff. You know, we see things happening and we always have a sense that people are getting away with it. And that sometimes is fueled by the initial response and the angry response to the story. Like, how could this happen? But like, and you're right, the initial statement was dreadful. It was sort of like, you know, people for fools, really. Like, you know, and it just wasn't intelligently crafted. And maybe it was underestimating the scale of this.
I didn't think it was honest, which was the big problem, Dan, really. You know, that ultimately was the problem.
I guess to get to my point, though, I suppose, yeah, about the change of views on it. Like, there has been accountability here.
Yeah, you know, there has.
We'll see what happens with the punishment. But really, like, I mean, the punishment of having, like, Envoy Allen and some of his best horses taken away from him, we'll see what happens with the rest of them. The likelihood of, you know, some form of sanction, you don't want to preempt anything, or something like that. That's a strong punishment. Like, you know, there have been instances, say, of other sporting indiscretions where people get hit with some kind of fine or some kind of ban or of a maybe more short-term description, where there's, like, revulsion initially for an act, like, you know, someone sort of gouging or something, and they're back in 12 weeks or 18 weeks. Oh, it's a harsh punishment. But like, there's things have been taken away from Gordon Elliott this week that he will never get back. And I think that, you know, including like his standing probably within the sport itself. So I guess all I'm saying at this stage is that, like, there has been that accountability that we don't always get, that people probably demand initially. And at this stage, it is getting to the point where it's like, okay, let's look more at the culture around this rather than, say, the individual, because that would be part of my stance on this, is that, yes, he was the, like, idiot in the pick, right? But there was obviously people around it, and in the other subsequent video as well, that were sort of clearly okay with it. Like, I'm at this point in the piece, you now can't believe, right? You can't credibly, plausibly believe that the only two times this has ever happened in any degree, you know, in any sort of form, someone just happened to have a phone nearby, you know, that clearly, like, you have to, and I'm not talking about the individuals in question, I'm just saying in general, it's clear that maybe the sport has some issues to address about how it carries itself in certain ways, or certainly, listen, maybe it is just complete, like, two-off episodes, right? But it's hard to believe that now, right? I think that the public trust and belief in that has probably been hurt, so I think it's more about a debate about what this says about, you know, how it's so important that everything that is done in the racing world is done in the correct and proper way to address this going forward, rather than necessarily making it an issue of, let's just make an example of someone. I think, like, you know, Gordon Elliott has felt the force of a quite strong sanction, regardless of what happens on Friday. And I guess that's just the point that needs to be made here.
Mm-hmm. No, that's all fair. Richie, the Club Players Association is no more.
Yeah, the Club Players Association dissolved as of first thing this morning. The group was established in 2016 to fight the corner of the club player and to try and sort out the fixture calendar. And with the ratification at Congress last week of the split season, the CPA has decided to disband, believing all of their aims had been met.
We're going to talk to Liam Griffin this hour, get his take on, well, I guess the reasons behind disbanding are probably obvious, in that they feel the split season pretty much is job done, and maybe chart the last couple of years and see what he makes of where we are and what he'd like to see happen over the next while. So it's good to have Liam Griffin on. That's on the way in about 15 minutes time or so. Latest on Liverpool?
Yeah, latest on Sheffield United. Actually, first though, Joe, Phil Jagielka has been sent off in their game with Aston Villa at Bramall Lane. He was initially shown a yellow card by the referee, Robert Jones, but upon review by VAR, that was upgraded to red, and off goes Phil Jagielka. So Sheffield United playing the last half hour with 10 men as they try and maintain that 1-0 lead. Alisson and Fabinho are both set to be available for Liverpool's Premier League meeting with Chelsea tomorrow night. Fabinho's missed their last four matches with a muscle injury, while Alisson missed the win over Sheffield United following the recent tragic death of his father. While long-term absentee Diogo Jota could also feature against Thomas Tuchel's side. Meanwhile, Klopp says the club might not release certain players for international duty this month. The likes of Alisson, Fabinho, Sadio Mane and Diogo Jota are among those set to be required in countries on the UK's red list. That means they'd have to isolate for 10 days upon their return. FIFA is allowing clubs some flexibility regarding the release of players, and Klopp says they fully intend to use it.
And I think all the clubs agree with the same problems that we cannot let the boys just go and then sort the situation when they come back, or visit our players in a 10-day quarantine in a hotel or whatever. That's just not possible. I understand the need of the different FAs, but this is a time where you cannot make everybody happy. So, and we have to admit that the players are paid by the clubs. So that means we have to be first priority. That's how it is. And that means now, with all understanding for the different needs and the competitions coming up in the summer, I get it really, but how is that? You cannot make everybody happy in the same time in this period of our lives.
Now, I suspect, Dan, there's going to be great friction, as Klopp is alluding to here, between clubs and countries when the international break happens. I mean, we much of last year, from a Republic of Ireland point of view, was just couldn't have been more disastrous. Are you in any way optimistic that for some unknown reason the bubbles will hold a bit more this time around?
I don't know, Joe. I mean, there's still travel across the continent. I mean, I think the most recent round of Premier League tests, it was two positives, and like even within the most controlled bubble environment, like you're still getting cases happen. So it's hard. I don't want to make any confident predictions. You look at it in October, I moved operations to England effectively from November, thinking that this would reduce the possibility of issues.
Ooh, your line's just gone. Just gone. But Richie, we should mention, speaking of the international window, interesting news from Serbia.
Yeah, 3 weeks away from hosting the Republic of Ireland, we think, at least. Anyway, in the World Cup qualifiers, Serbia have a new manager. Yugoslav legend Dragan Stojkovic is to guide his country until the end of the Euro 2024 qualifying campaign. His last managerial gig saw him spend 5 years in charge of Guangzhou ORNF in the Chinese Super League. Stojkovic, as I mentioned, a Yugoslav legend, winning 84 caps for his country and playing at both the 1990 and 1998 World Cups. He captained the side at the latter.
I think we've got to take that as a bit of a plus, don't we? Brand new manager in, first game basically against Ireland.
Yeah. I mean, based on that, was obviously they sacked the previous manager after they lost on penalties to Scotland in that qualifier for the Euros. So they're not in the best of places. Stojkovic only has 3 weeks with which to work with the squad. But in terms of Yugoslav football or Serbian football, you would have very few players of that era who were held in a higher regard than him. So the players you would imagine will respond to him. He's after bringing in a couple of other ex-Yugoslav internationals with him to work alongside him. So you'll hope that he'll hope they'll get the bump in the opening matches, at least against both Ireland and Portugal. But it won't be easy. But on Dan's point, I think what we're going to be looking at, because you look at teams like Portugal who are on the red list for UK travel, and there are others as well. We're going to have a Champions League situation, I would imagine, coming fairly soon, whereby qualifiers are being played in neutral countries. And this will happen in the games that are occurring in 3 weeks' time, just to make sure that they can go ahead and that there aren't travel blockades because it's going to be a nightmare. As Klopp mentioned it in his press conference, the UK is doing things pretty well at the moment, but yet remains on the red travel list for other countries, which is why we've seen Champions League ties played in the likes of Piraeus and Budapest and Bucharest over the last week and a half. So I think we're going to see a lot of neutral venue World Cup qualifiers coming up over this month.
Yeah, I suspect you're right. So the French Rugby Federation had been tasked with finding out what happened with this outbreak. Was it Fabien Galthié going off to watch his son play a rugby match? What's gone on here? Because the French sports minister, frankly, was livid about the whole situation and she wanted answers pretty quickly. So the FF or the FRF have come up with their answer, and Fabien Galthié in the clear is what we're hearing.
Yeah, cleared of any wrongdoing by the French Rugby Federation. The France head coach admitted to leaving the team bubble to watch his son play rugby for Colombier Espoir against Stade Francais, but is not believed to be the source of a COVID-19 outbreak in the squad. The Six Nations game with Scotland had to be postponed on account of the number of cases. That, meanwhile, is set to be rescheduled for March 26th. It would seem Patient Zero is believed to be a France Sevens player who was asked to train with the Six Nations squad. A couple of interesting lines coming out of that report as well, Joe. One of its authors, who works on the FFR medical team, questioned whether or not, or why they had to draft this report at all, because they knew and they figured out pretty quickly, at least in their minds, that it was this Sevens player who had basically been the source of the outbreak in the squad, and that Galthié, clearly given the distance he travelled and the precautions he'd taken to go and watch his son, wasn't the person who brought this back into the camp. And they said any bubble, as we've seen, as Dan mentioned, with the Republic of Ireland in the last set of international games, any bubble is fallible. And this can happen, unfortunately. And there's no finger pointing is going to make it any better, unfortunately. So that's their outcome from it, at least.
I mean, that was always my sense as well. Like, it's an airborne disease that's highly contagious and you can pick it up off surfaces as well. Like, you know, like one, never mind careless, one unfortunate moment. And once it's in there and it spreads, it spreads. Yeah. Like,
The thing that struck me about it, and I don't know if this was raised because obviously I'd have to go digging into a full report in French, which mightn't be on my radar over the course of the next few years. But France had been actually pretty careful, as have England actually, with the amount of players that they've called up for Six Nations squads. So England had this core list, essentially, of 26, I think it was, and then they had a shadow squad who were, you know, minding their P's and Q's and ready to be called in at any moment. And similarly, France had trimmed their numbers from an initial 36 down to 31 to keep the clubs happy, but then invited in this Sevens player to make up the numbers in a training game, not being entirely sure of how well or not he was being, or he was adhering to the protocol. So that's ultimately where they probably fell down, was thinking that somebody from another camp was going to be okay, because they seem to have managed it pretty well up until that point.
Yeah. News from Athletics then?
Yeah, Darragh McIlhenny has been forced to withdraw from the Irish team competing at this week's European Indoor Athletics Championships. The Cork runner was due to compete in the men's 3,000 metres in Poland. However, McIlhenny has returned a weak positive COVID-19 test, he says, and will be unable to travel to Turin. Kieran McGeehan had already pulled out of that squad due to issues in training. Yeah, Cheltenham organisers have described the ground as good to soft and soft in places in their first official going report ahead of the 2021 festival, which is now, of course, less than a fortnight away. There's been no racing this year on the track, and clerk of the course, Simon Class, is expecting rain to ease conditions early next week.
Expectation that come the beginning of next week, we'll be looking at ground that is good to soft, good in places. There's then a spell of rain, which will take us back to where we are at the moment, good to soft, soft. It might even flip it round to soft. But beyond next Wednesday, Thursday, it turns slightly cooler again and is looking like being a dry weekend before the festival. I'm not going to speculate now, and I wouldn't ask the forecasters to, what's going to happen the week of the 15th. But
yeah. Dan, I'm Cheltenham. I mean, it's hard to almost think about stuff on the track at the moment from a horse racing point of view, but it's coming into view now.
It is, Joe, and like, this is the problem. I mean, it's a showcase time for the sport. I mean, I think there was always a danger, and probably still will be some kind of negativity around Cheltenham this year. Harking back to last year, it's almost a reminder to some people that 12 months on from, I suppose, the week when we remember this all starting, the pandemic starting, and so I think the sport had a challenge to almost redeem itself after that, which may be very harsh, but, you know, that's public perception. You can't argue with it sometimes. And that's why, like, obviously what's happened this week is just, like, you know, like, there is an attractive face of racing. It's just not doing a very good job of showing itself at the moment. And, like, that's the big problem.
Rich, news on the Olympics. So I think they're making a decision pretty soon on whether overseas spectators can attend.
Yeah, Tokyo 2020 organizers say a decision on whether overseas spectators can attend this summer's Olympics and Paralympics will be made at the end of this month. Earlier, IOC President Thomas Bach reiterated their full commitment to making sure the event is safe for athletes and indeed the Japanese people. He's also confirmed countries are making good progress in vaccinating competitors that have are having a COVID-19 jab won't be mandatory.
Yeah, Rich, the reports I saw suggested overseas fans won't be allowed, which is not a surprise to anyone. Yeah,
that'll be sensible. I mean, getting athletes into the country and making sure that they are protected is the chief concern. I know there is a sizable contingent will travel over to these Olympics, but I think they will be somewhat aided by the fact that they are out of the way from a European perspective, that they mightn't have been seeing the numbers they initially would have thought they would have had in a quote-unquote pandemic-free year. So, yeah, I think the sensible thing would be to just call this and say it's going to play out in front of locals, make the tickets available as you possibly can for them and put the assurances in place from a safety point of view that as many people can attend as is safely and humanly possible and go with it from there.
Okay. Last couple of stories.
Bad day for the Irish at the Gibraltar Open snooker. Welsh Open winner Jordan Brown lost his first round match 4-3 to Rod Lawler. Fellow Ulsterman Jared Green was whitewashed 4-0 by Stuart Bingham. And Scotland manager Steve Clarke says he hopes to take the national team to the World Cup in 2022. Following speculation, he could be appointed as the new Celtic manager. The Scottish Premiership champions are looking for a permanent replacement for Neil Lennon, who resigned last week. Clarke will lead Scotland into their first major final since 1998 during this summer's rearranged European Championships. Still 1-0 to Sheffield United with 18 minutes to go. Sheffield United down to 10 men following that sending off of Phil Jagielka. And still 1-0 between Burnley and Leicester at Turf Moor. 18 minutes to go on that one, Joe.
ATP assistance then for tennis finally.
Yeah, it seems like good news this. The ATP Tennis Tour will increase prize money on offer at lower ranked tournaments as part of a financial support package for players amid the coronavirus pandemic. Winnings will rise by up to 80% of pre-COVID totals up until Wimbledon in July. The extra money will come from the pot that ordinarily goes to the top 12 players at the end of the season, with Rafa Nadal and Roger Federer among those giving their support via the ATP Player Council.
Okay, very good. Dan, you're off to Shamrock Rovers, Cabinteely, pre-season friendly. Is Robbie Keane officially involved now or just lending a hand, or what was the nature? I just saw a few headlines this week.
Yeah, no, he's been turning up at training regularly, so I'm told, but not in an official capacity, more so in a lending a hand, having the odd word of advice. But I suppose this is something that might come up tonight in discussions or people looking to see if he's around the place. But certainly nothing formal going on, more so a case of keeping his eye in rather than being lined up for something.
OK, very good. Well, enjoy the game. Dan McDonald, thanks very much. Richie, thank you.
Come on, Cabinteely.
Stuart Barnes and Keith Wood on the way after 8 o'clock. Up next, Liam Griffin's going to join us, the CPA disbanding.
The News Round on Off The Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.